Hello, you're welcome to Inside Education. Our website is insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. Around this time of the year, many primary schools are thinking about school tours. It's a day that children look forward to every year. Some teachers use the tour as a day or two when children and teachers can get to know each other in a less formal setting than the classroom. Some tours have an adventure feel to them as students engage in pursuits such as hill walking, rock climbing, canoeing and the like. Although other schools leave the country and spend a night or two in another country, most stay in Ireland and take the opportunity to visit places of historical, geographical or cultural interest around the country. On this week's programme, I'm bringing you on a school tour of our own, in the company of Paddy Madden, who is a frequent guest on this programme, and Gordon Darcy, an ornithologist and member of the Heritage in Schools scheme. Gordon and Paddy brought a group of student teachers on a tour and spoke to them about how to enrich and deepen students' experience of a school tour. Our venue for the excursion is the Burren in County Clare, and Gordon and Paddy will point out some of the specific features of that destination, but the themes that are used by our guides are themes that can be used in many venues to exploit the educational potential of the school tour. Gordon began by outlining the itinerary for the day.
Our first stop is a place called the Glen of Clab, which is really in the heart of the Burren. It's one of the remote places. And at the end of the Glen of Clab, we have Paula Vallon, which is a collapse hollow there, a dooling. So that's our first place that we're going, our first stop, if you like. And then we'll get back in the bus and we'll continue on northwards to a place called Eagle Rock and St. Colman's Oratory, where St. Colman came in the 6th century. And we'll see Bohir Nemeas and the cave that he stayed in and the Holy Well and so on. And then after that, we'll continue on northwards, follow the road down to the new line, take the new line up to the coast, and we'll stop at Lenans, where the narrow causeway is between Auchinish Island and Finnevarra. And then we'll stop there and have a bit of refreshment, continue out from there along the coast to the Flaggy Shore. And the Flaggy Shore is where we'll check up on the geology. We'll look at the fossils and we'll learn about the background to the Burren and where it came from. After that, we'll go out towards Loch Murray and beyond to the Martello Tower at the tip of Finnevarra. We'll be able to look back across at Ballyvaughan Bay. And then back for ice cream, hopefully on the way home.
So it was time to set out and we began with a geology lesson.
Now, this is the Glen of Clab, which in Irish means the Glen of the Mouth, basically. So it has a mouth-like appearance. It's an extraordinary geological feature in that it's a valley, but it wasn't formed by a river. And everybody knows that a valley is formed by a river or a stream that eats down through the land and eventually leaves two sides. And either like, for instance, if you think of it in its extremity, the Colorado River and the Grand Canyon. But here, this was formed by geological forces that occurred before the Ice Age. So it wasn't formed initially by meltwater or anything like that. It was believed that this limestone that the Burren's made of was overlain by another rock, the rock of the Cliffs of Moher. It's called shale, and it's an acid rock. This is an alkaline rock. So at the beginning of the Ice Age, maybe 1.8 to 2 million years ago, it started to get very wet, and water from the overlying rock started to eat down through the rock, and when it came to the limestone, it gouged out these valleys. And these are called poljes, P-O-L-J-E-S. This is a miniature polje. Some of the ones in the Burren are huge. In fact, the Turlough in Carron is lying within a polje. It's usually described as an enclosed valley without any river. So this is a typical example of a polje. And we're going to walk right up to the very end of it. And at the other end of it, we'll find an extraordinary hole in the ground, like a bomb crater, which was formed by a collapse in the underground cave systems of which the Burren's full. It's got two landscapes. It's got a peripheral surface landscape and an underground landscape, a subterranean landscape. And people come from all over the world to explore the cave systems that are here. But originally this was thought to be a collapsed cave, but now the geologists tell us no, it ties into pre-ice age to the rock that covered the Burren that was cleared off or bulldozed away by the ice during the ice age to leave the limestone underneath. But you can see it's quite rounded, so a tongue of ice must have come right up here and rounded off both sides of it. And again, just to repeat what I was saying at the start about this being completely bare during the famine times and afterwards, because the population was quite large in the Burren then, maybe 10 times what it is today. This side of the valley probably had some boulder clay smeared off on it, while this side was attacked by the ice. So it's very, very rugged and craggy. And it's on this side that the natural forest has come back to grow. So you're going to get species here like you have birches up there. You have, the predominant species is ash. You'll have spindle tree, holly, elm, aspen, and a small amount of oak. And these are all native species that are growing here in this valley. So it's a treasure. It's a micro, an ecological microcosm of what the Burren would have been like in the past. So my plan is to take you all up this track, right up to the very end of it, to where we'll see Paula Vallon, this great hole in the ground. Are you with me? Any questions?
The shale then was very acidic.
Very acidic.
The rain washing down, bringing the acid down to the limestone.
And as soon as it hit the surface of the limestone, it gouged out.
Yeah.
It gouged out these pulges.
And then the ice made it.
The ice came and took all the shale away.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And then rounded off the landscape.
It's kind of a union.
That's it. Because there's no trace of a stream in it anywhere.
Later, we came across a boulder, and that was another opportunity to learn some geology.
Just take a look at this great big boulder here and the way it's being opened up by the elements. Limestone is very prone to being eaten back by the rain. These cracks indicate that. The lines of weakness are sought out by the rain, and gradually the fissures open up and it breaks down into small pieces. So even though it's physically very hard, it's chemically quite soft. Okay, that's because rain is slightly acid. It's got a pH of about 5.5, and this is a pH of about 8 or 9. So when the two meet, you get this chemical reaction. Carbon dioxide given off, weak carbonic acid formed, and the cracks opened up. Okay, so that's one of the reasons why the limestone of the Burren is so fretted, you know. So when the cattle overgraze it in the winter time and they take the vegetation off, when the elements can get at the rock, the rock is subject to being worn away very quickly. And that's is also why none of the rivers flow overland in the Burren. They flow underneath the ground, you know, in the cave systems.
A school tour also gives the opportunity to learn about plants and traditions while using all the senses.
Did you ever eat those shamrocky shaped?
For lunch, you're having goose gobs, yes.
Mmm, lovely. Acidly tangy.
Woodsorrel, it's called. It's a lovely tangy taste of it.
Mm-hmm. There's more of it down here.
Some people think it's the clover or the shamrock. They think that was the actual shamrock. Isn't that right, Gordon?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a dispute over which is the
There's
shamrock.
There's about four shamrocks.
Yeah.
There's what's the one that's normally used? The very small one. Yeah. What's this they call it now? Hop trefoil. Hop trefoil is the one that they usually use. The little bunch of small leaves.
Black medic.
Black medic's another one that they
yeah.
use.
And
they use
clover.
Here and they use clover.
And sorrel.
And they use the sorrel.
We used
sorrel.
To eat them on the way home from school every
I bet you
time
did.
Of the year.
Nice.
Eat the, isn't it nice?
Yeah, it reminds me of something.
A lovely taste of it.
A lemony tang off it.
In those RT programs where they're foraging, they're yeah. often collecting the sorrel. Cooking and eating and salads, all kinds of things. So we'll get a big dinner of it here.
A school tour can also give the opportunity to make connections to literature, as Paddy took the opportunity to recite a poem.
Do you know the blue one up there? That one.
That's the violet.
A violet by a mossy stone half hidden from the eye. Fair as a star when only one is shining in the sky. Wordsworth wrote those lovely words about his sister. And they're very nice, aren't they?
Yeah, they're kind of sad as well. There's
they're
a
sad, but
the,
yeah.
I suppose daffodils as well has a sadness in it. You know, that fluff, I wandered lonely as a cloud that
yeah.
floats on high. I mean, he's kind of making a comment about the circumstance of being alone and looking on the inward eye and daydreaming, as it were.
Yeah.
Something that people try to slap out of kids nowadays.
And this gives him pleasure.
It gives him pleasure. It gives him great creativity, too.
And Gordon found several opportunities to introduce some aspects of biology to the students.
you see this grey stuff on the bark of the tree there? Yeah. There's moss and there's grey stuff. That grey stuff is called lichen. And that particular lichen there is a scarce lichen that's very sensitive to pollution. Any pollution in the air, say from a factory or anything else, would kill all that off. So lichens are indicators of clean air. And the Burren has 360 species of lichens. So it's enormously rich in lichens, out of a total of about, I think there's less than 1,000 in the whole of Ireland. So it's a very interesting place. Some of them are extremely sensitive. That one is, and the next place we're going to is a little oratory in the Burren, a little secluded oratory. And there's another lichen that grows there that's very sensitive as well. It's called lungwort. So I'll point that out to you when we get there.
Paddy and Gordon also showed how you can use the opportunity of a school tour to share with learners the characteristics of various plants and how they tie in with traditions from previous generations of children.
See the hazel here? You see these rods? When you cut hazel down to the bottom, they go up on straight poles like this. So they're brilliant for fencing and also for wattle, any kind of wattle. And you can use them for bean poles and also to make wigwams from them. Can you see how straight they grow? Yeah. In England, it's a big industry called coppicing, where they cut the hazels down to the butt every 7 years and you get these straight poles and they sell them. And I don't think it's very popular in Ireland.
I don't know if there's a tradition in Gaelic Ireland of doing that.
No,
I don't think there is.
It's big in England, isn't it?
Yeah. Coppicing. Yeah. And fellas come over here and show us how to do it, basically.
But
it's like hedge laying.
Yeah.
Like there's no tradition really of hedge laying in Gaelic Ireland anyway.
No.
It's something that we learned from the English and from the Germans. You know.
Like this it would be one way of keeping down the hazel, wouldn't it, if you had an industry of coppicing here?
Absolutely.
And it's a great... I noticed now in the English garden programmes, and instead of using bamboo, you know, which comes from China, they're using hazel to make the wigwams and to make the fencing and to make the bean poles, and they look absolutely rustic and natural in the garden, whereas the bamboo just looks like a bamboo. But I find like in England you can go into a garden centre, you can buy a huge big gwall of those hazels and bring them home, but here you can't get them.
No,
it's very
unless specialist. You come in and cut them yourself.
Yeah, but I mean that's...
And there's loads of it here, as you can see, but the problem is that the natural browser, you know, the red deer is extinct in the Burren.
Yeah.
That would really have done a job on the hazel scrub if they'd left it alone. Yeah. But they were hunted out.
And when I was a kid, now this is where we'd be, in here with a knife, and look what we do. We'd get one like that, perfect to make a bow and arrow. So we'd take off these bits here, get a string, put it across here, put an arrow here, and we'd be hiding behind bushes and that, shooting arrows at one another.
Yeah,
I still have two eyes, and I often just wonder about the danger. There was health and safety.
Nah. Yeah.
This, you're a cowboy. Who's on today? Who are the cowboys today? So the cowboys would come along, and they'd get sticks like this, shaped like a gun. See, like this one. Is that okay?
Bang,
you're dead. And the Indians would have these, and we'd be chasing one another round. And, I mean, if the arrow hit you anywhere, you were dead. Or if I came out and suddenly surprised you and put the gun in front of you, bang, you're dead as well. We'd spend hours and hours at this game, yeah. But you can see why it was used for, because it's so pliable and flexible.
When we came across a badger set, Gordon pointed out its several entrances and told us that badgers are clean animals who change their bedding regularly and go to the toilet outside their set. He also cautioned students to be conscious of myths about certain animals which are untrue.
There's a whole group of animals that are undesirables in certain people's terms, and they make this mythology or stories around them. You're supposed to go out with a stick in your boot at night time if you're near a badger set. So if the badger bites your ankle, you'll hear the crack and let go. And that's absolute folklore.
Yeah.
It goes down about 2 or 3 metres, but there's a whole labyrinth underneath the ground. Yeah. And they're in there at the moment. They won't come out until night time. Look at the bedding over there. I can see the bedding pushed out of that one. See it there? All the bedding from inside.
On a few occasions throughout the tour, Gordon made a distinction between how local folklore interpreted various features of the landscape and how geologists talk about them.
I think it's nice to have both a foot in both camps, and when you're out with a group, say with kids from the class, it's nice to just present both sides of things to them. And I think it's important to do that as well, because science tends to sanitize everything and reduce it to a kind of grayness based on facts. The colour that comes with the landscape and with the environment is often put in through mythology, through folklore, through the arts, photography and painting and so on. And poetry, of course. So I think you should always show those two sides to what you're doing to the kids, so that they don't become kind of cynical very quickly. You know, once they learn the facts, that's it, we'll go on to something else.
And of course, if you stay observant on your school tour, you never know what might come your way.
Bird of prey coming this way, look. That's a kestrel. This bird here? That's a bird of prey called a kestrel. It's got a brown back.
You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Our website is insideed.com. This week we're on a school tour in the Burren in the company of Garton Darcy, ornithologist and Heritage and Schools member, and Paddy Madden, who's a frequent guest on the programme. Well, of course, sometimes you don't see all the animals that you want to see in a school tour, but you may see the traces that they've left behind.
Can you see that? That's a typical wood mouse hazelnut that's been opened. You can see all the little gnaw marks around the edge. He's a tiny little mouse about that size, with big kind of dish-shaped ears and a long tail. And there are thousands and thousands of them in here. In fact, they're the stable food of owls and so on, and birds of prey. But they kind of semi-hibernate in the wintertime, and they go in underneath the hazel and the moss, and they make a little cache of these. And they sort of go to sleep for a while. And every time they get hungry, down to the fridge for a feast.
Are they mushrooms there, Gordon? See there?
No.
No.
Those are the unfurled ferns that grow in the woods here. Mm. There are two or three different species. In fact, you can see a couple of them have already expanded there. That's the male fern. Oh, that one there, yeah. Male fern. There's also a lady fern. There's also heart's tongue fern. There's lots of different kinds, but those are the croziers, as they're called, because they look like a bishop's crozier in shape.
I mentioned that Gordon was a member of the Heritage and Schools scheme, so I wanted to find out a little bit more about that. But I started off by asking Gordon if many schools come down to the Burren on school tours.
Lots and lots. Mostly primary schools, and they come mainly to the Aylwee Cave. The problem is that a lot of them don't get a real experience of the Burren simply by going to Aylwee Cave or maybe into Ballyvaughan or whatever. They tend to go off there to McDonald's afterwards and really get a very fragmentary experience of the Burren. But the schools that I go to and take out here, I take to more remote places like here, and then they get a real hands-on experience of the Burren.
And you do that under the Heritage and Schools scheme. Can you say a little bit about that?
The Heritage and Schools scheme was started in 1997. And I was one of the founder teachers on that. We're about 15 at the start. There are 165 teachers on it now, or people with specialist offerings, if you like. I'm a naturalist, but there are people that make bridges, crosses. There's one guy who does Bronze Age music. You know, it's a wide range of extracurricular specialties, if you like, that these people bring to bear. And under the Heritage and Schools scheme, you go into the school, you work with the children, both indoors and outdoors, primarily outdoors. And in my case, I would take them on a field trip to a place like this, and then we'd go back to the school afterwards, and I would teach them about the place using the medium of art more than science, but a bit of both. And I would get them to work with me on a participatory basis. So every specialist works out their own regime. And it's a win-win situation. The teachers get a kind of a laid-back day where they can let the specialists take over. The children get exposed to the periphery of the curriculum or a cross-curricular educational experience. The parents are delighted because usually the children are getting out to a place that they would never take them to. So they're often learning about their locality in its heritage terms. And it's, as I say, a win-win.
And I mean, does it have to involve going into the school, or can it be, say, a teacher and a school group meeting you down here in the Burren and spending the day around the Burren?
Absolutely. It's often the latter. The next school that I'm going to, Scull Owen in Loch Ray is meeting me at the Flaggy Shore, and I'll be imparting information about fossils and about the geological history of the Burren, and then going back to the classroom with them in the afternoon. So that's the way it'll work with them.
And how can teachers find out about the Heritage in Schools scheme?
Well, the website gives it's heritageinschools.ie, I think. It's run by the Heritage Council. It was supported by the INTO, but they've moved away from it now, and it's now the Heritage Council that's operating it in its entirety. So, you know, look up the website, and it tells you all about how to engage with it there.
Gordon has also written a book that can help introduce primary school children to aspects of nature.
It's called Nature. The word nature comes from nature and art combined. It's aimed at primary schools, and particularly at primary school teachers, who can use it as a manual to do workshops, and there are 60 different workshops in it. It's age-related, in other words, it's pitched at different ages. There are primary school, there are junior lessons in it, if you like, for infants, and then intermediate, and then right up to fifth and sixth class.
Given the amount of experience that Gordon has in bringing school tours around places such as the Burren, I asked him what kind of things engage children and get them interested in these school trips.
I think hands-on is what it's all about. So actually feeling the rock, using a magnifying glass to look at the coral fossils in the rock, maybe picking up a fossil, taking the plants along the coast that you can eat, you know, the edible plants like scurvy grass, samphire, sea beet and so on, and just letting them eat that and realise that you don't get all the food out of a supermarket. Looking for things like a bird's nest, perhaps, evidence of snails in the cracks in the rocks, footprints in the mud. That's something I often look for footprints of animals like pine martens, which are pretty scarce, but have a very distinctive footprint. We might visit a badger set and see where the badgers have pushed out the bedding and where they have their latrines and so on. Look for signs of early budding, early flowering. Take photographs. Maybe if we have time and the weather's clement, do a sketch or two. But we tend to leave very little evidence of our having been there behind us, if you know what I mean. And I teach them the simple country lore of not damaging anything. You know, sometimes kids are very exuberant with trees, for instance. They mustn't damage a tree, otherwise it'll stop it from growing. Simple country lessons like that.
Obviously, if a teacher has the resource of a guide like yourself who has lots of expertise, they can do quite a lot, and they can do that through the Heritage in Schools scheme. But supposing a teacher is trying to do this on their own, what kind of preparation do they need before they bring children out on an excursion like this?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on how au fait the teacher is with the whole out-of-doors circumstance, if you like. It doesn't do any harm to get a book on habitats and, for instance, check up on the Burren, what it's famous for. What's the significance of hazel scrub? What kind of things would you look for in the cracks in the rocks? That kind of thing would help. Why there are so many caves in the Burren? There's another thing. If you're going to visit Aylwy Cave, it's nice to know why you'd go to Aylwy Cave in the Burren more than, you know, before somewhere else. Those are the kind of things that a teacher could do by checking up on the internet before going out, or getting one of the many books. I've written a book on the natural history of the Burren myself, or I've written a book about the walls in the Burren. That's another great kind of feature to learn about too. So there are a plethora of books on the Burren now. There was an actual explosion of publications in the 1990s. So the teacher can very easily lay his hands or her hands on that literature through the internet before going. I would advise a quick peruse of that. The best book to read about the Burren is called The Book of the Burren, Chirula's publication, which has 14 different authors highlighting different aspects of the heritage, the natural and social heritage of the Burren. I would actually focus on that as a priority. Look at that first, and if you want more detail, for instance, on caving and fossils, whatever, chase those up afterwards. But the Book of the Burren is the first reference. The other thing that I would recommend any teacher to get his hands on is the map of the Burren. There's one quintessential map of the Burren which was created by Tim Robinson. It'll never be beaten because it was created by him on foot. He spent 10 years in the 70s and 80s walking around highlighting every interesting feature, whether it's a turlock or a rock outcrop or a ring fort or a Fulloch Fia. It's all on that map. So get your hands on that. It's just called the Burren Map. I can't remember how much it costs now, to be honest with you, but it's a must for a teacher bringing a class to the Burren.
And finally, Gordon, today you brought a group of beginning teachers around on the trip of the Burren. If there was one thing you wanted them to remember after today, what would it be?
Now that's a big, broad question. One thing that I'd like them to remember,
or to have gained from the experience.
I think the importance of its use as an outdoor classroom for the teacher and for the kids. That even if you live a good bit away from the Burren is unique. There isn't anywhere else in the country like the Burren. And although it's often been described as a non-Irish place by visitors because it's not green and emerald like the rest of the country, it has got a great heritage richness that is good for educational purposes. So if I was going to suggest to a teacher one place to come to in the country that's so different from anywhere else, I would recommend that they come to the Burren. And the thing that they would, if you like, take away from the place, having been here, is the experience of its uniqueness, its unusualness.
And Gordon certainly gave us a flavour of that uniqueness on our day trip of the Burren. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to or download podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on InsideEd.com or on iTunes. You can email me. My email address is InsideEducation@DublinCityFM.ie. Thanks to this week's guests, Gordon Darcy and Paddy Madden. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.